Hi, today is November 21, 2021. This is Mobius Podcast 383. And once again, I've got an echo in my ear when recording this thing. So, oh well. But we've got John Westfall, as usual. And our special guest is Sven Johansson. This week, we're going to continue our discussion of the 25th anniversary of Windows CE. And note that this podcast is 13 years old. Yeah, this month. So, yay.
It's a very, very amazing triumph, considering that this podcast has been so regular and something that I've been excited to be a part of. So I think,
thank you, John.
I think Todd, you should be very, I suppose, proud of your accomplishment for our fives of listeners.
Well, you know, really, it's thanks to you and our other friends who are willing to sit down on a Sunday and take some of your personal time and just chat about tech. So thanks to you and Sven and Jack Cook and Don Sorcinelli and Frank McPherson and a whole bunch of other old friends. Once again, since I got this echo thing, I'm going to try to talk less and listen more. So, John, you got a couple of things to start with before
there, there are a few interesting pieces of tech news this week that I'm curious to get your thoughts on, Sven's thoughts on. One, obviously, that I think took a lot of people by surprise is Apple's new self-service program that we found out about that we're not exactly sure how it's going to work, how expensive it'll be, how inexpensive, what parts of the 200 or so parts they say they're going to be offering and tools and all those things. And I guess I'm just wondering what is the... what's the catch? You know, I mean, how does this work with warranty? How does it work with, you know, if I try to fix it first and I screw it up more?
I think that's the catch right there.
Yeah.
I think that's the catch right there. You know, there's plumbers will have a thing, you know, if your husband has tried to fix it for first, it costs more. You know, so, yeah, I have fixed things. I've replaced screens in cell phones. I've replaced batteries in small tablets and stuff like that. And it's touchy. I mean, you really, you know, you watch the video five times, make sure you think you can do it. One Nexus I had, it was a Nexus 7. I replaced one battery in it. I had a second one, the battery in the back. I said, well, before I buy the battery, let's make sure I can get it open. I cracked the screen getting it open. So, yeah, so, but it was, you know, it's a, you know, it was a 7-year-old tablet that wasn't much good anymore. So I figured, you know, for $50, I'll put a new battery in it and be better. It was one of my favorite tablets. I wish they still made them. And, but, yeah, it's not necessarily easy to do. So, I think some of the people are talking about, it would be better if phone manufacturers made their products so it was easier to do. But that comes with more screws, less water resistance, you know, and, you know, from being an electronics technician, electrical engineer, the more parts you put in there and that you can take out, the more things there are to fail and the connections go bad.
Definitely.
So,
yeah. This screams to me that Apple is trying to get out ahead of right to repair.
Yep.
Before there's, you know, legislation that says it has to be not only able to be repaired, but easy to repair, which would obviously necessitate a lot of the things you just said. And it's one of those things that they can, as a market leader, push the other OEMs to do something similar. And maybe I think this is just a big ploy, try to get out ahead of the legislation that might not be as favorable to you, and maybe that will be put on a back burner if you've got something already for consumers.
You know, that's a good point, because you know, it's not just the right to repair, it's how easy to repair. If you need a surgical laser to repair something, that's not going to be too easy.
Yeah, I mean, some of the things, there's certainly some things in there, the battery is, I don't know how well it's stuck in there. A lot of places have, you know, even just double stick tape is pretty hard to get out of there. Sometimes if you got a battery stuck down, you need to peel that thing off, get some more of it. You pull in a tiny little connector off from the battery to the motherboard, and you don't break the connector, you break the one on the motherboard, you're screwed, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
makes me wonder what secrets we will find out. You know, iFixit for years has had all these ways of undoing the adhesive and their eye opener product and all these other things. I'll be curious to see what Apple's official way of getting rid of that adhesive is and all that that they would want people using.
Yeah, and then you know, if it's still within warranty, I'm a big Apple Care fan. Mm-hmm. It just, you know, it's just so simple to let the manufacturer take care of that stuff. I do that with my cars, you know. If it's a new car, I take it back to the dealer, let him fix it until it's out of warranty, you know. Yep. Once it's out of warranty, but I can't, you know, I think it's a little bit much to ask an electronics company to stock parts for stuff that is already out of warranty for a long time. Because it's old stuff, you know, it's not stuff that's being produced anymore. So they got to come up with the logistics concepts of how many spare parts do we make for things to be used after the things are out of warranty and no longer really good things. So, yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't have touched my Nexus 7s if they weren't, you know, 5-6 years old at the time. But you could get those parts.
Great idea about the parts, because, you know, we know that Apple, for example, if it's beyond a certain age, you might just get an upgrade. You know, there were people reporting that I forget which iPhone it was, if you sent it in toward the end of its lifespan, you might have gotten the iPhone SE that had come out a year later from it, because they had those. Oh, wow. And they could just swap it. There's been stories about that where they don't have the parts anymore, but they have the refurbished devices ready to go, and it's still under Apple Care, so they will, you know, occasionally bump you like that. So now they're going to have the parts if they say you can actually repair it, unless, you know, the repair kit is, here's a refurbished, you know, iPhone SE or, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah, and then you got to look and see what the things cost. I mean, selling a consumer a single LCD screen or a single battery is, you know, they're still going to make some money on that, I'm sure. Oh, and yeah. And I know Apple has been beat up for having the most profit out of their stuff, you know. So 60% markup, but even if they, you know, even if it's a you know, an Apple $30 battery and they charge you $60 for it, it's only like $90 for them to put it in, you know. Mm-hmm. So with the batteries, so I'm not sure if it's worth it. We had one where we had a battery that the Apple battery system told us that it was bad. You know, it had gone bad. It was just a bad battery. Took it in. They looked at it, did their little diagnosis. Says, yeah, you're right. The battery's under warranty. Come back in an hour. We went over to Panera, came back in an hour. They said, well, we had a little problem. We replaced the battery. That was no problem, but we couldn't get it to turn back on. Here's your new iPhone. You know, so.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah, that's definitely not something you could have done at home. You know, you couldn't have reached into the ether and pulled out a replacement iPhone
when the battery replacement went bad. And I'm sure if they, you know, walked down there with an open iPhone in a shoebox saying, could you fix this for me? That costs more than, you know, just plain old Apple Care.
Now, I will say where I'm at and the nearest Apple store is a, you know, 2.5-hour drive, then this might not make bad sense for older products where I can't just easily pop it, you know, to an Apple store. But even then, you know, I'm also a big believer in Apple Care. It's very rare that I would have an issue. Even if it's my iPhone, I can still usually limp by for a couple of days on an iPad with cellular and not having my iPhone. It's actually amazing how easy it is to do that when I've had to send in my iPhone for Apple Care in the past.
Yeah. Now, like I said, I've done it on some Google devices, and I replaced a screen in an old 1020 Lumia phone, and Nokia's engineering was just great. That was so easy to change. But again, the phone had been out of warranty for a long time. I found a screen on Amazon, said, give it a shot. And it was so easy to do. But they engineered it very well. So it was one, oddly enough, it was one screwdriver down the headphone socket. You unscrewed it, and the whole guts just popped out of the unibody case. And you could see everything. You could had connectors for the battery and connectors for various things. The screen just came off the front, put a new one on, put it back in. Put that one screw back down to lock it in. It was very easy to do.
You made me go check my Apple Care for my iPhone. I got one more year.
Yeah,
and I did the Apple Care month to month now on most of my devices. I don't mind doing that just to keep it going perpetually. Because some of these devices, if the, you know, for example, my iPhone, my iPad Pro that is my primary daily iPad that I take to work, it's out of AppleCare. You know, it expired, I think, at the end of last year because it's been a two-year or a three-year, and I bought it. Maybe it expires in this December. Whatever, it's going to expire, and I'm not planning on upgrading it for at least probably another generation. So I do like the idea of perpetual AppleCare as long as I want to keep these things. Plus, if you think about it, my iPhone 12 Pro Max that I thought I was going to keep for 2 years, I would have bought 2 years of AppleCare coverage on it, ended up trading it in after a year. Not a big deal. I just paid, you know, I think I accidentally paid an extra month on it, or it just had renewed when, you know, 2 days before I decided to.
I didn't know you could do month-to-month AppleCare for an expired warranty, you know, or a two-year-old product or whatever it is.
Well, you have to get it in, you know, within that first 60 days or whatever the way AppleCare window is.
Yeah, and it just bills every month.
Yeah.
Those things go on my Apple card, so, you know, I can tell what's still on very easily.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did not know that. I learned something new after all this time of owning Apple products.
Yeah. So speaking of non-Apple products that are similar to Apple products, I got my new Aura Generation 3 smart ring this week. It came in on Friday, and I've already noticed a few of the interesting things others have been reporting. First of all, the reviews of the Aura I find to be pretty spot on, where you're reading these things that are like, yeah, it's not bad, but it's not, you know, it's not great, and definitely the change to a subscription model is not something most people are going to be happy with. I did find that over the Generation 2, the Generation 3 is more accurate in that it's, you know, that was a big complaint with Gen 2 was that you would, you know, have a great night's sleep and it would tell you you slept horribly and you're like, well, that doesn't really jive with how I feel this morning. And now I've noticed the last couple of days it's been more accurate in terms of how I actually feel when I get up in the mornings. And I'm eager to see what they do with the platform. I'm also very eager to compare the data that it reports that's similar to what my Apple Watch is reporting. So they'll both report real-time heart rate. The Aura Ring doesn't have it quite yet, but it'll be kind of curious to me to compare and contrast those data points. But at the end of the day, I like it for its sleep tracking. I like it for its metrics. I like that I can wear it when my Apple Watch is charging or vice versa. One can be on while the other is charging. Battery life does seem to be a little bit less than the Generation 2. That's also been reported. So it looks like I'll probably have to charge this one every 3 to 4 days instead of every 7 to 8 days. So it's a little bit of a drop in that. But otherwise, I will keep reporting on it and how I'm enjoying it.
Hey, John, refresh my memory. Does the Aura Ring do body temperature?
It does.
Ah, good.
And that's primarily what it is known for, having very good predictive metrics using body temperature for when you're about to get sick. That's why it, you know, was bought for all the NBA players when they went into their bubble in 2020 and all that stuff. And from at least a few reviewers I've read, if you are female and have a menstrual cycle, it's apparently very good at period prediction. So
interesting.
That's you know, one place where I know others have struggled. So that's something that's important to you.
Yeah.
Aura Ring.
And it is spelled O-U-R-A. For those of you too lazy to go to mobileviews.com.
We should be incentivizing people to go there. That's, you know, okay. Versus, it's spelled with some letters. It's for some random letters. You need to go to mobileviews.com to figure out what it is.
Yeah. That isn't, I've looked at that a number of times, but I don't really wear rings. So.
Me too.
Yeah.
I replaced my wedding band with it, with the consent of my wife, which is, and the irony is when I lost a bunch of weight, I had to go down 2 ring sizes. So when I bought it in 2020, I bought a 13 and now I'm at 11. So it fits right on the finger I wanted on again.
Okay.
And the other one was falling off other fingers.
Until the beloved Spot watch came out, I didn't wear watches either.
I wear two. Wear a watch. Yeah, I've done that for a while too. Occasionally, not right now. I don't have a worthwhile Android Wear, Google Wear watch.
Well, I've got a Fitbit on my right wrist and an Apple Watch on my left.
My wife has done that a lot, and she complains about both of them for different things. Fitbit does this much better than the Apple. Damn it! Apple does this much better than the Fitbit. Damn it!
You know. And speaking of MobileViews.com. I just wanted to note that I bought a new domain. Sorry, the echo's really messing up. And it's geezerviews.com. So I was thinking,
I should be on that tonight. Jack and me.
Actually, that's the reason I mentioned it, because you're on the podcast. John's too young to be a geezer. So I was thinking, what am I going to do when I retire? And my answer to anybody has been, I'm going to watch K-dramas. But I thought, well, maybe I should do something else. So I have no idea how to monetize it, but I was going to invite Sven, if he's interested, to contribute. And sure. Jack and some of our other geezer-like friends. I hope they don't take offense.
Not at all. I mean, yesterday my great-grandchild was over, you know, so.
Wow.
Well, Todd, you've got 397 days, 5 hours, 8 minutes, and 35
That's
seconds
right.
to
That's
figure
right.
out exactly how you're going to do this.
Yeah. So I've already got a domain, right? So I've got to start. And I invited Sven, so he has 396 days to think about it. And then I might start it before then, just to make use of the domain. It's I've got it pointed at medium.com right now. I didn't even put up a website or anything.
I think this is tech related or just geezer related.
You know, that's a good question. And the reason I didn't
geezer related. Just complain about everything that you don't like.
You know. The AARP reason why,
tips, you know?
Yeah, where the good discounts are this week.
Social Security, you know.
You know, there's a guy. I haven't seen him in years. Let me see if he has a Wikipedia entry or something. There's a guy named Harry Newton, and he was a serial entrepreneur. I think he's still alive. And he did Computer Telephony Magazine, he did Telephony Magazine, you know, all in the same vein. But one of the things he told me many years ago, like almost 30 years ago, I think, if you're going to name something, try to give it a generic name or as generic as possible without being branding useless. So you can expand beyond whatever your original concept was. So it could be tech focus for senior citizens. Or as I like to say, temporarily challenged. Or it could be just anything geezer-like. Rant of the day. Kids nowadays. Anyhow. Okay. So, 25 years this week, I think. Yeah, I think in a couple of days. It's Windows CE turns 25 years old, a couple of days. Sven, when did you enter the Windows CE world?
Might have been 25 years ago. Probably not quite that long ago. But it was, I picked up a couple of handheld PCs. Remember those things? They're,
I sure do.
You know,
still have them.
Yeah, I still have a couple of them. I think that's my first stuff. I did, you know, some Palm Pilot type stuff and some little Windows things, but the Windows CE, I think, was handheld PCs. And I cheated my way into using them where I shouldn't have been using them. What it was is I was a tech in the Air Force, and there were places you couldn't bring laptops very easily. The environment. However, I needed something to be able to program multiplexers. And normally you'd go in and you'd ask to borrow the one that they normally use, which was always broken or being used. So I got a little handheld PC, and I told them it was test equipment. And so I managed to walk in, program my multiplexers with the little thing. It had a serial cable, you know, serial connection to the MUX, and everything. Everybody was happy. The other thing I used it for was kind of interesting. There's a bit error rate test set that sometimes you know, for doing data links, you test the bit errors in a new link, and you hook a little thermal printer to this thing because you leave it for 24 hours usually and come back and look at the errors that were generated. Well, sometimes if the circuit goes bad, you can run, you know, 50 feet of thermal paper through this thing, and you come back with a pile of paper on the floor. I used the terminal on one of these things as the printer. So I hooked the bit error rate test set, Firebird, for those people that were in the industry, to this thing with a serial port, and just let the terminal take the data. And then I had a data in a document that I could actually search and format and do all kinds of stuff instead of, you know, we used to take the thermal paper and tape it to paper and then copy it so we could have a record. So that's mostly what I used it for. But it was really nice, small, convenient, had a serial port, even had a little, you know, had CD, SD card slot on it. So
PC card, actually.
Hmm?
CF card.
I think it may have been a compact flash, yeah.
Yeah.
So I could record stuff to the compact flash, take it home, stick it in a computer, and back when those had compact flash.
Yeah. So you just mentioned a couple of things younger folks have no idea what are. Serial port, compact flash card.
Yeah. I should sort of like bring floppy up a line disks. Cable. Yeah.
I was waiting for Geezer Views to pop in and for you to say things that young people have no idea about, like hard work. Maybe you're just not curmudgeonly enough yet for Geezer Views. Need another 397
I'm holding
days
back. I'm holding back. That's what you're hearing.
So I was doing that, and when the pocket, you know, when met you with pocket PCs, they're kind of the next thing in line. So
right.
So, and that's where that started. But yeah, those were fun little devices.
Do you remember what your favorite CE device, handheld, pockets, whatever?
No, I think the one I used most was a little NEC. It wasn't little, actually. It was like 9 inches wide, NEC.
Yeah.
But you know, it was like a small laptop. Flip it open.
Like a 720? No, wait, what was it called?
I don't know.
900? Something like that. 800. Mobile Pro 800.
Yeah, it was a Mobile Pro. NEC, no, Mobile Pro, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a great
one. Some hundreds of something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
but those were nice.
Yeah.
They had a use, you know, they had a specific use that you could, you know, some people needed them.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't very common back then because there were no smartphones, so people really weren't,
no,
you know, and cell phones, while not too expensive, the cell phone time, the talk time was expensive.
Yeah.
So back in the 90s, there weren't a lot of people with cell phones, actually. You know, back when we paid 79 cents a minute or something for talk time, it was something, or maybe that was a long distance, but I remember it was double digit cents per minute. Just for talk time, and you get like 15 minutes of talk time free or something per month.
Yeah. And that's all you could do with them, is you call somebody and talk to them, that's it.
Yeah, yeah, hopefully. But, very fast.
Yeah, but for some people that was a, you know, that was a need, you know, bag phones for the car and stuff like that. So people don't remember those
either. I couldn't afford that.
Yeah,
it was way too expensive. Definitely way too expensive. So what was your favorite Windows mobile phone? Because I don't think any of us had a favorite Windows phone.
Well, if you do the entire line of things that Microsoft made that had phones in them, I think the Lumia 1020 had to be my favorite.
Oh, really?
It still is.
That was a recent. That was a Windows phone, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was. Was not. I don't think it was Mobile 10. It was just Windows Phone.
Yeah.
Phone 8, I think. But yeah, that was just a phenomenal little piece of hardware. The pictures were amazing, and the only thing wrong with it, I thought at the time, was it was a little slow. When it first came out, it certainly wasn't compared to what was already out. But over time, what increased so much in phones was their camera capability, the speed, and how fast it could do some videos and everything else. And the 1020 just got kind of left behind. It was a 40 megapixel camera back in the time, and Nokia knew how to use those pixels. It wasn't just there.
Yeah, true. Nokia always had great cameras.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's funny you mention that, because I think my favorite Windows CE phone didn't have a camera, and that was the very first T-Mobile Pocket PC edition.
Was there a Windows CE phone?
Well, it was based on Windows CE. It wasn't called Windows Mobile yet.
Oh, okay.
The Pocket PC phone edition, I believe, had a camera.
Need
to
double check.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I'd have to go check. I'll tell you why I think it didn't have a camera.
Because
I remember I had to go borrow a Nokia smartphone, you know, based on Nokia's whatever their OS was back then. I had to go borrow a Nokia
Symbian
smartphone to Symbian, thank you, to do a smartphone camera set of articles for O'Reilly for their what was it called? Photography hacks. Yeah, and I couldn't use a Windows CE based or Windows mobile phones because nothing had a camera.
I am looking. The one article I just went to, it does not mention.
Yeah. But that's it. Despite
but
not
it
having
have
a camera.
Flash slot.
But yeah,
no,
it did.
It didn't. It had SD.
The earlier one, the HP or the Compaq and the HP.
Oh, the Compaq iPad.
Granada.
With a sled.
With the sleds on it.
Yeah, but yeah, the Pocket Edition didn't have a sled.
The Granada was really a nice phone too. Well,
you're right,
PC.
Todd. It did not have a camera.
Yeah, and that's why I used an IKEA for the O'Reilly book.
And I could actually have taken that to work.
You know, you talk, Todd, about having to get something, work around these things. It reminded me of when I wrote Windows Phone 7 Made Simple. It was coming out at the same time as the first Windows Phone 7s, and there was no ability to take screenshots. Because they had taken that out of the operating system. And it was, so I have, in that book, I have screenshots that are physical camera shots of the screen because there are no, there were not screenshots. Ah, yeah, Sven has a copy right in front of him. Sven, does yours have the actual device on the back? Or did you get one of the ones that, yours is missing it. Yeah, that was the copy that my publisher swore never made the shelves.
But it did. It's on the Sven shelf.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. I signed it.
That's a rare edition.
It's very rare. A-Press swore it was rare.
But that's funny, because I remember I had to do a couple articles too for when Windows Phone came out. And I had to go talk to Microsoft to get some screenshots from them. Although I think you could do it from Visual Studio or something. Yeah, I think if you connected it to Visual Studio, you could, with some plugins, you could actually get a screenshot. But it was a giant hassle. Definitely a giant hassle. Yeah, Microsoft really blew it to Windows Phone. That and not being able to run any of my applications.
Windows Phone 7 and 8 and Windows Mobile and Windows Phone 10. And
I loved Windows CE and Windows Mobile. I thought they were great.
Yeah, but nobody else did.
Yeah, well, that's not true.
I liked all of them too.
Yeah, because when Palm was number one, I think Windows CE, Windows Mobile really, had something like 27% market share.
Yeah, I remember that.
So it's actually more of a market share than what Apple's iPhone has right now.
And market is the operative word. Somebody else knew how to market.
Yeah, and it's a much tinier market. I think 30% is like 25 million unit sale or something.
Yeah.
In total, all manufacturers. Yeah. So what was your last Windows phone,
last Windows
I guess?
Phone?
Was it a Nokia?
Yeah, it was the Microsoft Lumia 920s. I think they were still called Lumias. But after Microsoft bought Nokia or their phone part and then made the 920 and 920 XL, I had those. Yeah. Tried to use them to death.
Didn't Microsoft sell Nokia to something? I forget who bought it.
I don't think so. I think they just kind of dissolved it, put it in a vat, let it dissolve into the rest of the company. But because Nokia is sort of back. The company still exists, and then that HMD company that is, I understand, across the street from Nokia, that's making phones now.
Right.
Nokia.
Right. It was the radio portion of Nokia, right? The groups that made not the groups, but the group that made like cell tower equipment stuff.
Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm just looking now, and BBC reports Microsoft sold. Who did they sell it to? In 2016. The echo is still driving me nuts. They sold it to somebody. Doesn't say who. HMD, wherever they are.
HMD is the company that is making the Nokias now.
Yeah, that's who Microsoft sold it to.
That's just.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
didn't think that was the case. I thought they just, I thought HMD was a company that existed that Nokia went and said,
I got it partially right.
Because we're not allowed to.
Microsoft sells the Nokia feature phones business is the headline. So they sold the feature phone part, not the smartphone. I guess the smartphone thing just disappeared. Yeah. All right.
Because they, you know, when Microsoft bought Nokia, they never made a feature phone.
That's right.
Yeah, they just.
Which is too bad because Nokia's feature phones were awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, I would hesitate to call the phone I use to do the camera photography hacks a smartphone. It was smart-ish, but you know I wouldn't.
You get into one of those definition things. What's a smartphone? What's a PC?
Yeah, exactly. What's the line between feature and smart?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, going back a little bit closer in time, 13 years ago. So in November 2008, I started this podcast. And it started off because I was a full-time blogger. And the company didn't want to actually pay my bills to host this or anything. So I kept it after the gig was done. But, you know, just looking back, I just took some notes. When I started this podcast, the iPhone was 1 year old. Android had come out 2 months before. The T-Mobile G1? Yeah, I remember Frank bought one. Frank and I both bought one. I returned mine. And Windows Mobile was still viable. I might have been Windows Phone by then. I can't remember. I think it was still Windows Mobile. Windows Phone was like 2009, 10, something like that. And we still had to wait 2 years for the first iPad. So it was a really different world. I mean, you know what, compared to what we have now.
Yeah.
Oh, Swin's got something in his hand.
Nah, it's just an old flip phone from that time. It's a Samsung. It does no camera. That's it. It's got a little World Wide Web button on it. I'm not sure why.
It's probably got a little browser.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. Yeah.
So Sven has worked in places where you cannot take in any device that can take a photo.
That's right.
So these phones that seem featureless to us are important to him. I worked in a place like that too, like once.
Yeah.
So I have no work photos from that era.
Nope. I don't have any work photos right now. Not at work.
Yeah. Well, if you did, you wouldn't be on this podcast. Some man in a dark van or a dark SUV would roll up.
No, I'm saying I have pictures of people I work with, but not at work.
That's right.
So.
But yeah, so much has changed in 13 years. And I should note, you know, although, you know, looking at the podcast count, 383, it's obvious I haven't done one every week. But we've done at least once a month, you know, for most of those 13 years. So it's been surprising how long it's lasted. And quite frankly, I have to give credit to John for being willing to come on for most weeks when he's not on a super secret mission. Because otherwise, I'd be sitting here talking to myself. And while I do that often, it's not that much fun.
Yeah, I saw something on I think it was Facebook. There's a meme. It was a lady says, "Sometimes I talk to myself, and then we just laugh and laugh."
Well, let's see. Let me see if I can look up this quote. You can probably hear me clicking along as I type.
It's a clicky typeboard.
It's a MacBook Pro. Which is a terrible butterfly keyboard. Oh. Yeah. But, you know, I can't find the quote I was looking. Something about Thomas Jefferson said, the finest discussions I've had are nights I dined alone. But at any rate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something like that. But what I was going to say, you know, the new MacBook Pros don't have the touch bar.
Yes.
And
yes,
while I poo-pooed the touch bar... When it first came out, after getting my 2019 MacBook Pro, I found out I like it. So I'm disappointed it's gone now.
Yeah, it's kind of it's an interesting thing. I think, you know, people who are, you know, spend their lives on their keyboards may not like it because they do so much stuff just with the keyboard.
Yeah.
And you miss that. You can't, there's no tactile feel to that thing. But for me, it's great. I'm not a touch typist in the first place. So I type something and it, you know, I can reach up and change volume very easily or contrast or anything like that. And if it's done well in some of the apps, I'm sure, you know, Photoshop, things like that, if you want use having an actual slider up there
It's awesome.
Kind of nice. Yeah.
So. Yeah. I really learned to appreciate the touch bar. That said, you know, speaking about not wanting to lift your hands on a keyboard. So in the old days, you know, old Unix guys like me, where you could do everything with keyboard commands, including cursor movement, you know, without lifting your fingers from the QWERTY keyboard. We had a hard time using a mouse originally. Or WordStar. Remember all the control keys and stuff?
Oh, WordStar. Control.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. And I remember when Word would had a little key on it where you could say, show me the WordStar keys to do this.
Yeah. You
know? So.
Hey, this is the start of Geezer Views.
Yeah, it is kind of. But, so now Logitech has a new keyboard out that has emoticons on it.
Oh, wow. You can change, I didn't see that one.
There's a row of keys on the right, and somebody mentioned that, you know, old IBM function keys used to be over on the right-hand side, a vertical column of a few of them.
I remember that.
Now they're emoticon keys, and you can change them and then change in the settings what you'd like them to be. And somebody commented on the report on it, says, it's not enough. I need an entire number pad worth of emoticons over here.
Wow.
So.
I just use smiley face, sad face. I don't use a lot of emoticons. I'm a geezer.
Poop emoticons, you know.
If you don't have a whole keyboard row dedicated to them, that's why you're using them.
Yeah.
It's going to be like that. If you're on a Mandarin keyboard.
Well, you guys aren't Windows guys, so you don't have the absolutely wonderful Windows period brings up an entire, you know, emoticon keyboard. Yep.
Windows period? I didn't know that.
Yep. I'll
make a note of that. Windows period.
Yeah.
You can hear me typing again.
Yeah. And it brings emoji keyboard. Emoji keyboard, and at the very top of it is keep typing to find an emoji. So you can just keep typing whatever you want to say, you know, birthday, cake,
yeah,
sad, whatever.
I do use a Windows laptop for work, so I will try it.
Yeah, give that a shot. Yeah. Yeah. That's Windows 10 and 11.
Me, since you buy and use everything, did you install Windows 11 anything or buy something with Windows 11?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did, actually. I've got it on, I got it on one of my wife's machines, but I have it on two of mine. I have this, you can't see this on, you know, out there, but this old Dell.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a hack, but it's not officially supported.
I see.
Which I find is really odd, the way Microsoft has phrased that.
Well, it means you're not going to get updates, right?
Well, yes, but I'm in the insider program on this thing, so I have a newer version of Windows 11 than people who have official Windows 11.
I see what you're saying.
So I think as long as I stay in the insider program, it keeps updating. But there are things that I can't do. The new Android subsystem, it says this isn't supported, so you can't load the Android subsystem, which I don't really care.
Mm.
I put it on my Surface Pro. I let that upgrade the way it should have.
Oh, that's just natural, a natural upgrade.
Just natural, normal upgrade. Yeah, it was a natural upgrade, normal upgrade. Yeah. It said, it's available to you. Would you like it? And yeah, I said, go ahead.
Does the Windows subsystem for Linux run on your unsupported Windows 11?
I don't know. I haven't tried. The Android
because I do find that handy.
Yeah, I imagine it does. I thought the the iOS app thing on a Mac would be interesting too, but the first thing I tried, believe it or not, was the Starbucks app. Doesn't run. It's not in the store. not available.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's a bunch of stuff doesn't run on.
Yeah, it doesn't.
iOS
compatible. And I think it's a matter of the author has to authorize it to do
so.
And they probably just haven't thought about it because it makes so much sense to me. He's going to Starbucks and there are all these people with Macs around. While they're doing whatever it is they're doing, they could pop up their little order from there with instead of going to the website, just pop up the app, make the order, walk over and pick it up.
Maybe they don't want them sitting there too long.
If they're ordering, they're fine.
I guess so. That's a good point.
Yeah. So, but that's the first one I thought, well, I wonder how this thing looks, because I've done that on a Windows machine with a UWP type thing or a web app. I can bring up a little sort of Starbucks app by itself in a window.
Well, I've got a 2019 desktop. I think it's a Dell. And mm-hmm. I've got a 2019 HP notebook, and neither of them are upgradable.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have a good number here. My desktop that I'm working on now is not upgradable. Yeah.
Which is okay. I don't feel FOMO after listening to people's experience after upgrading. I was curious.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know there's a lot of stuff underneath, under the hood that they've done, but the vast majority of the changes you see are in the start menu. And nobody really lives in the start menu. You live in apps. And the apps haven't changed, really. They got rounded corners now, but Word is still Word. Excel is still Excel.
I thought Notebook was rewritten. A notepad.
Yeah, it's got rounded corners.
is that what it is? Is that it?
Yes, very little difference.
Oh boy.
But for anything else, you launch your app or half a dozen of them, whatever. Once right. you've gotten into it, it doesn't change. But my, I'm one of these guys that when I pop up my, you certainly can't see this. I could share it, but if you pop up my start menu, it's four columns of four tiles. Like 10 tiles high. I know where everything is, and it just takes me, half a microsecond to get to the app I want to get open. That's not the way it is anymore. There's like 10 apps that are on the start menu, and the rest of them are in the all apps list. So you can open up start and type whatever you want, type WO and Word pops up. So, if you're a touch typist and that's how you used to do things, it's fine. If you're an organizer with a lot of stuff, like my wife's iPhone and mine are radically different. I have stuff I need on the first page, and then I have a page full of folders, and I know where every app is in every folder. She hasn't got a clue where anything is on her iPhone. She swipes down, use Spotlight search, types the first few letters, and the app pops up. That's the way she works.
I find that interesting, because isn't your wife a technologist?
Yeah, well, was. She's retired now.
But still, what I mean.
But that's
right?
the way she works, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. She was an MCSE, for Pete's sake,
That's what I mean. Yeah. For a non-techie, I would kind of expect that. But
yeah, well, that's just the way she works her iPhone. It's been works for her. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Hey, I have my iPhone laid out that same way as your wife. I have like a few icons on the first page, and I use Spotlight search for everything else. And I have an MCSC as well, so maybe so, it's just something that's an MCSC thing. Yeah, I have a PhD.
It's a softy guy. It's a softy thing. I'm an engineer, hardware.
It could be something like that.
Things in my mind. I have things in boxes. I hook them together. So.
Okay. Last topic before we end, Black Friday sales. I'm looking at Apple's early Prime Day, and I think I might buy a Crucial 1 terabyte SSD. That looks pretty tempting. 38% off.
Yeah, it's very tempting for me to look through and see if I always note that my big thing is the ultimate bag that I still have not found. I've been very good lately about not buying bags. And, it tends to be that on Black Friday, I find these weird gadgets I never knew existed. And so those are the things that sometimes tempt me. I did buy Evolution Labs has a charger that they had on sale last week that has an Apple Watch connector on it. It's basically just an external battery brick with an Apple Watch charger built in. So I bought that for $34. That seemed like a good purchase to have for travel. But other than that, I don't have anything on my radar. So you're thinking about that SSD, Todd. Anything else you're thinking about?
No, I was just kind of scrolling through the list. And I found a smaller one I actually want, because, you know, my MacBook Pro and my MacBook Air are only 256 gigs, so I don't really need a terabyte. I don't care if the Time Machine dumps stuff after, you know, a few years or whatever, or a few months. So I'm going to add to my cart a 500 gigabyte portable SSD for $45. So that has been added to my cart. So yay.
Who makes that? Is that Crucial?
Yes.
Because yes. The Samsung little T7s and T5s are really nice little units. They're super small. They're smaller than a credit card type thing.
What is it called? A Samsung?
Samsung, say T7.
T7. SSD?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they have them in a number. I think they're a little more expensive,
Yeah,
they
are
might.
Nice.
You might get some. And I'm not sure you can tell how small they are from the pictures.
No, I can't.
But they're absolutely smaller. They're thicker, of course, but they're smaller than, you know, a regular credit card in size.
But they're not 50
so they're
bucks.
Very. Well, it depends on which one you get.
This is the one I.
Yeah, that's pretty small. Yeah, so I think the Samsung is a, you know, it's rectangular, but probably about the same volume as that.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good.
So this one is for my MacBook Pro. I've been using a regular thumb drive to back up my MacBook Air. But as you know, the thumb drives, they kind of wear out if you use them as a backup. So I need to find SSD. Yeah. I don't know, John, what about you? Are you looking for anything?
Nothing particular. You know, I'll see what kind of strikes me. But I've been, you know, when you buy the stuff as soon as it comes out because you want to play with it, at the end of the year, you don't have all those things that you were thinking, I'd love to have one of those, because you already got it and maybe returned it and maybe, you know, reviewed it and all those things.
Yeah, I don't know what I want.
I'm kind of same as John, isn't I? If I see something, I got it. I'm still sitting here waiting for my Pixel Pro 6. That hasn't come yet. And since then, I've ordered the new Qi charger for it, the new extraordinarily expensive Google one. but it's kind of nice. I mean, I've got a couple of Google Pixel chargers already for the ones I've had in the past. This one's a little better. It's good. We're at the point now that it has a fan in it, so that it doesn't heat up the, you know, phone too much. So.
Wait, the charger has a fan?
The charger has a fan in it, yeah. So they can charge it, you know, excessive, but not what they implied watts.
Yeah.
There's a big controversy about that now, too. I'm really not looking at anything particular. You mentioned a charger you found. I found one, too. You've probably seen Apple's little fold-over travel charger mm-hmm. that they want $130 bucks for.
Mm-hmm.
Stack Social, which you probably find an ad for periodically, had these things. And it's actually a three-point fold-out thing with the watch charger in the middle, showing it to you guys, with a MagSafe on one side and just a regular Qi on the other. So you can lay this thing out, have your watch up for your side stand, and get traveling again. Have your watch sitting up there, you know, the way you have for that. Put your iPhone here and it won't get knocked off in the middle of the night, and throw your AirPods on the other side. It's magnetic, so it actually comes up in a little triangle like that if you just want to have your watch on it.
Yeah.
It actually comes with something that, you know, Apple doesn't really provide for you when you buy theirs.
Yeah.
The actual
wall wart.
Yeah. Wall wart, yeah. So it's kind of a nice, and then it just, you know, there you go, and falls into a nice little package like that. I thought it was great for traveling. It's $50.
Yeah,
and I'm never going to travel again. So,
yeah, I have that feeling myself. You know,
and but, you know, TSA is supposed to lose a whole bunch of people because of, you know, their mandate, and so they may be down 40%. So travel this holiday season may be more miserable than usual.
Yeah, so, and it's, you know, it's got
What's
a good
that?
MagSafe on it.
Oh, that's the magnet. Oh.
So it's got the good MagSafe on it. So that problem of, you know, having a travel charger and laying your phone on and accidentally bumping it off in the middle of the night, this doesn't happen with this.
Yeah. Well, you know, the usual things I bought during the pandemic to try to solve one problem or another. Like, you know, I probably bought 10 headsets, three USB microphones, you know, and so forth. I think I bought a lav. Actually, I think I bought two lavs, just trying to find out something that works. What did work, by the way, is this Anker Soundcore Q30, which is one generation old. I think there's a Q40 that's more expensive. But that's what my daily driver for Zoom conferences and Teams conferences.
Your background filter was trying very hard to take that thing out when you showed it up. It was were two earbuds, but no headband.
There you go.
Yeah. No, I saw it, but as you held it up higher on your head, it erased the headband.
Yeah. So that's my daily driver after going through 10 devices or so. I bought three webcams, I think. There's a Logitech is the one at home, and I have a Microsoft Live Chat in the office that I paid out with my own money.
Yeah, this is my Live Chat. Buy. That's what I'm using.
Yeah.
And I did that for myself in the office, too, this one.
Huh. I'm just looking at some little odd keyboards. Nope, nothing I really, really need versus, you know, kind of want. And those are different things. All right, well, maybe we'll regroup and figure out what it is we actually buy, if anything. Maybe we won't buy anything. Except for my Crucial for $45.
A couple of weeks, I'll actually have a Pixel 6 Pro. So.
Yeah, I'd like to hear more. I'd like to see some photo samples. I've got a 4, I think it's a 4A. What is this? I think I have a 4A, which I like a lot. You've seen the case. But I don't know. I just don't feel the need to buy another Android phone right now. I also don't feel the need to buy the iPhone. So I still got a 12 Pro.
Yeah, that's what I've got. No, I didn't upgrade. My wife did for some reason.
Yeah.
I mean, it was one of those.
Yeah, my wife is upgrading hers, but she has a 10, so she really needs
to upgrade. Oh, yeah, that absolutely makes sense. Yeah. Now, with the way AT&T does their upgrades, you know, with trade-ins and stuff.
That's what John did, I think.
Yeah, very little cost. It just didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. Well, I just don't feel like upgrading right now.
Yeah.
Although I do like the photos John's been taking.
Yeah. And now Pixel Pro, I traded in a bunch of stuff, and so really didn't pay much more, about $300 for the thing. So traded in my Duo, my Surface Duo.
We were just talking about a Duo the other day. I think with Craig Peacock when he was here. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting device. It's an Android phone.
With two screens.
In a strange form factor.
Yeah.
That I'm on a forum with guys on Facebook that the ones that are in that forum use the heck out of it and love it. And I can see it. I was doing something the other day on my iPhone where I said, oh my God, I wish I had a second screen so I could get that number off this one and paste it over there instead of going back and forth and swiping up and moving over and finding that app. And it was one of those stupid multi-factor authentication things where I had to, you know, I had to get sign into this, but get a key from that, which I needed to sign into, and get a key to sign into that thing that I needed to get.
And was it like crypto strong key, or was it a relatively easy key?
No, just I'm going to send you a code.
Okay.
To go get this, and I had to go, you know, the Microsoft Authenticator to get that one.
Okay, it's Microsoft Authenticator. It's a 6-digit code, right?
Yeah.
And so this is a geezer views discussion. See, this is a test. If you can't remember 6 digits.
Oh, no. You have to go to the authenticator to get the thing in the first place.
Oh, got it. All right. Well, John, you're getting bored because you're not a geezer yet. But the geezers, this is interesting. Like, do I have enough memory left to do this?
Special guest of geezer views.
What's that?
You'll have to have me on as the special guest for Geezer Views, up and coming geezers.
We'll have you as a cognitive psychologist to get your opinions.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's fine.
All right. So Geezer Views coming soon to a podcast near you. And we'll try to get people with beards like John and Sven. I don't have a beard because my ancestors couldn't grow a beard to save their lives. All right, gang. Hey, Sven, thank you so much for joining us on a Sunday.
No problem.
Really appreciate it. I got to figure out how to get rid of this echo in my ear. Driving me nuts. Okay. Thank you, John. Thank you, Sven. We'll talk to you next time.